Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 3:06 p.m. that is Pacific Summertime, and today is March 17th, and happy St. Patrick's Day to anyone who is celebrating. Well, I thought we'd kick off with the RSI on the S&P 500. I don't look at these kinds of indicators all that often, but I did post the chart of the RSI back on the 18th of February. This is what it looked like at the time, and there was a clear divergence, where we had continued to see higher highs on the S&P, and then we were seeing lower highs on the RSI. Well, subsequently, this is what happened. We had this incredible decline. But what I think is particularly relevant right now is that the RSI actually bottomed nearly 3 weeks ago. And since then, we have a significant higher reaction low. Now, if we get another day on the upside, then the RSI is going to break its sequence of lower rally highs. And that is probably going to help to signal a low of at least near-term significance. That, I think, is something that a lot of people have been waiting for. At least everyone I've been talking to, particularly retail investors, have been watching very closely for an opportunity to buy the dip. And we've certainly had a dip. Now, the hallmark of any secular bull market is that you do get opportunities to, really the best opportunities in a secular bull market are to buy the dip. So why would we get a dip? Well, there is obviously one big reason, and it is that the central banks and governments of the world are throwing money at this coronavirus problem. Again, I think one of the best ways to think about the market is to look at everything that people were worried about a year ago, and then to think that the coronavirus exaggerates it. Well, one of the things that people were particularly concerned with last year was the outlook for modern monetary theory. Well, we now have the reality of modern monetary theory. We have governments and central banks very eager to work together in order to spend, spend, spend. The Trump administration is talking about giving $1,000 to everybody within a very short period of time. Their ambition, at least, is to avoid giving $1,000 to millionaires, but in the efforts to try and get this done as quick as possible, well, they're probably not going to have a lot of choice. They're looking at a stimulus package of $1.5 trillion. The Federal Reserve has already committed itself to $700 billion in quantitative easing. That is probably the thin end of the wedge. Because what they are now also doing is they've cut the reserve requirements on banks, they've opened up swap lines. Then what we're getting is new pieces of news every single day. So now, today, they have announced assistance for the commercial paper market. The size of the assistance that they have committed to the repo market is in the order of $1.5 trillion. When we then think about, well, what's going on in the UK, the pound is right back down to test the 120 area. And this has been an incredibly exaggerated decline. The Johnson administration has finally woken up to the risk, and they announced a £320 billion stimulus in here today, aimed at supporting business, supporting the airline sector, and clearly to try and avoid a very deleterious effect on the economy. One of the things that I think is worth keeping an eye on is the fact that we have temporary workers, and these people are going to be easier to fire. This is particularly true when we think about the fact that so many businesses are going to be forced to close, and particularly those kinds of businesses that rely on temporary workers. We've also seen that temporary workers do tend to peak with the stock market, and certainly ahead of recessions. It's worth considering that the peak level for temporary workers was nearly 2 years ago, and it has been moderating, but it's likely to fall off a cliff when it is announced next, which will be for the month of March on the 4th of April. Then we have to think about jobless claims, which are reported with a 2 week lag on a weekly basis. So when they are updated on the 19th, it will reflect the 7th. And that's, I think, an important point, because we're likely to see a significant spike on the upside. And we're certainly going to have a recession. Nonetheless, there is definitely going to be a segment of the market looking to buy the dip. And the NASDAQ unwound its decline from yesterday today. When we look at the Australian market, it was up in a very strong manner in here today, so has found at least near-term support around the 5,000 level and unwound about half of the decline from the day before. When we then think about the UK market, the FTSE 100 was also in positive territory today, so it is at least unwinding some of the decline from yesterday. We have got incredibly oversold conditions. When we think about the potential for an RSI divergence, we don't quite have it on the UK in the same way that we have it for the S&P 500. The momentum has continued to be on the downside for a number of these European markets. And it's not difficult to understand why, considering that the scale of the problem has been more advanced in places like Italy and in France than it has been so far in the UK or indeed in the USA. The problem, of course, is that there is no testing going on. California has tested approximately 4,000 people, but for a population of its size, that is nothing. And I will give you some additional information in that the person I know who has most likely got the coronavirus was on holiday in Colorado with 10 people. One of them has been confirmed with the virus. Everybody is sick. He's running a temperature of 103. He called the CDC. The CDC didn't pick up. They phoned him back a half an hour later. They agreed that he was likely to need some form of testing, gave him an appointment 4 days later, and told him under no circumstances to visit an A&E. So that is where testing is now. Now, when the governments of the world are talking about ramping up testing, they don't talk about how long it's going to take. They don't tell us that they're going to have a X number of tests today and X plus whatever number tomorrow. They just say we're doing more testing, because they don't want to address the fact that they're woefully unprepared. And that is the reason why we are getting such extraordinary measures to support markets. Well, 10-year Treasury yields are higher in here today. They're up over 1% because investors are finally starting to ask the question, where is all the money going to come from to fund these extraordinary stimulative measures? Doesn't that mean that the value of the paper that's going to be printed to fund all of this is going to be worth less? There's going to be a massive supply of new bonds. Well, that deserves a lower yield. If anything, the short-term oversold condition in the equity markets, well, it's nothing compared to the overbought condition that we have on the bond markets. There is clear potential here that we're going to get a very significant downward move in bonds as investors start to take full consideration of just what it means to print trillions of dollars out of thin air. Because that's exactly what's going on. Let's go back then and think about, well, what happened during previous bouts of quantitative easing. We had meaningful moves upwards in yields. So it was quantitative tightening that was a deleterious effect. Quantitative tightening, in fact, resulted in bond yields contracting. Now that we have quantitative easing again, it's quite likely we're going to start to see bond yields expanding again. That is raising the question of solvency and credit quality for a significant number of these governments. And the fact that, for example, Italy has suspended mortgage payments, I don't think that that's necessarily a bad idea. In fact, it's probably necessary when there's nobody working. But the reality is that it is not great for the country's finances. And the net effect of the response to the coronavirus is probably going to represent a cohesive element in terms of driving the European countries together to look after each other, because this chart looks like we're going to see substantially higher yields on Italian debt. Then when we think about the German Bund, the entire yield curve was in negative territory until quite recently. But even here, bond yields are starting to rise. Even the integrity of the German government is going to start to come under pressure when we see just how much money they're going to have to print in order to get a control on this problem. Let's think a little bit about what exactly the problem is. I think it's important to continue to keep an eye on what's going on in China, because China has been a sea of calm on a relative basis compared to the extraordinary volatility we've seen in stock markets elsewhere. And the reason for that is because of overt government support for the market. But even for the shares of US-listed Chinese companies, Alibaba has really only reverted back to the mean and is still really quite close to the mean. When we then think about, for example, JD.com, well, it had been a little overbought relative to the trend mean and has now come back and bounced from it. China is offering outright assistance to its corporate sector, and they are obfuscating the reporting of coronavirus cases. The propaganda element in China is running absolute overtime in order to try and spin the coronavirus story. The next iteration of it is that they are claiming, and they have been claiming for more than 2 weeks, that it did not originate in China, but rather that it was planted there by the USA. They are now enforcing quarantine on all foreigners that enter the country. In fact, anyone who gets off a flight has to enter 14-day mandatory quarantine. But that is, in fact, going to be used as a rationale for blaming foreigners for a second wave of infections. That is the clear risk, because China is no longer counting people who are asymptomatic. They're only counting people that come in with overt symptoms. But if you come in with heart failure, well, then you're going to be counted as heart failure. If you come in with renal failure, well, then that's a kidney problem. Regardless of the fact those people are contracted or have contracted the coronavirus, they won't be counted as such. So those are significant issues, that the fact that China has probably achieved a peak in infections because they have accepted a high mortality rate without reporting it, is probably one of the factors that is leading to some stability. What we are seeing, however, is that Hanhai Precision is starting to get back to work. Now, it's going to be a while before they hit the peak of production again, but they did say that they are starting to ramp up production. The bigger worry for the company in the short term is demand. and with a global recession in the offing, obviously that is a rather large challenge. Well, one thing that I thought was very clear in here today was that gold shares followed through on the upside. And this now is looking like a more impressive rebound, particularly because it's been able to rally for 2 days in a row, and we haven't been able to see that in markets for a while. But of course, the bigger picture is that gold prices continue to hold the $1,500 area. There were reports in here today that central banks are going to be buying less gold. And I think that that's probably accurate, considering the challenges that central banks are going to have in terms of funding stimulus. They're less likely to be buying gold. That makes sense. On the other hand, everybody else is going to be buying gold because you can't print gold into existence. If we are moving beyond the very hard contagion element, then gold can start to stand on its own 2 feet once more. And I think it is likely that we have a low of at least near-term and potentially medium-term significance in the region of $1,500. So I think that is a meaningful development. Silver prices spent most of their day in negative territory and were able to squeeze out a positive performance in after-hours trading. But it is incredibly oversold in the short term. Palladium prices pulled back by nearly $200 at one point yesterday and were quite volatile in here today before finishing pretty much unchanged. And again, this backing and filling does suggest that, and volatility after a big decline, it suggests that there is a war going on between supply and demand, particularly after this big decline. The fact that platinum prices are back in the $600 handle when gold is trading at $1,500 is incredible and is not a condition that is likely to persist with this kind of undervaluation in the precious metal markets. When we then think about the oil market, I think there are obviously still challenges here, and prices continue to remain under pressure. This is something that is, I think, one of the clearest risks in the credit sector. We're going to see a significant number of defaults in the high-yield energy sector. The spread is over 1,800 basis points. It's significantly higher than it was in 2015 or 2008, which coincided with the other crashes in the oil market. So the unconventional sector in the US is much more levered. It's very fragmented. What we're likely to see, therefore, is a range of bankruptcies and a lot of private equity money and big oil money coming in to consolidate the industry. I think that is by far the most likely scenario. Then when we think about the regular high yield sector, we're back in the region of peaks from 2011 and 2016, and these were all buying opportunities. So the logical conclusion is that there is certainly the scope for some buying to start to come in here. But the difference on this occasion is that both of those previous buying opportunities did not coincide with a recession. And we are certainly likely to have a recession on this occasion. Well, that, I think, is should give some pause to investors in high yield. The potential is that we're just at the beginning of this recession. The yield curve spread is now surging higher. And when the yield curve spread surges higher after an inversion, we're on the front door of a recession. So that is certainly where we are right now. And that is why I'm cautious about buying dips. I think that we are due a bounce. I think that that bounce is going to offer an opportunity to get out of some of the most highly levered companies. One of the favorites of investors, for example, over the course of the last few years has been Shopify. The share just about halved over the course of the last 4 weeks, but it is still at multiples of where it was at the beginning of 2019. The company has got an estimated PE of 1500, and that's after halving. So that tells me that they are going to have a difficult time in a recession. Obviously, there is still going to continue to be growing demand for e-commerce solutions, which they provide, and it is really an e-commerce solution in a box. But in a recession, there is less demand for goods and services, and that makes it more difficult to for small businesses to prosper, particularly in the cutthroat competition of online selling. So, to me at least, that suggests that they are going to have a more difficult time. Then, when we look at Anheuser-Busch, it was trading at 120 back in 2016, and it's trading at $33 right now. It's pretty much back at the valuation, although not quite the price that it had from back in 2009. So a lot of bad news has been priced in a very short period of time. This is a company where the yield is currently around 5.3%. Now, maybe they halve the yield, it's still going to be competitive relative to equities. And we have this incredible downtrend and the acceleration to suggest that we have got a low. Kraft Heinz has trended down from 100 to 20, so a decline of 80% is probably enough. And the share was up in a meaningful way in here today. So it's not like we don't have deep value opportunities, but the value has got to be linked to some kind of cash flow on the balance sheet. And where cash flows are absent, then we're going to have the same kind of argument that was the reason why Kraft Heinz, for example, declined in the first place. It was those intangible values. And a lot of companies have a lot of intangible value attached to them, particularly when they don't have any earnings. So that, I think, is probably where we're going to see the opportunities. It's in investors now turning back towards a respect for value rather than speculation. Now, that is because we are still getting economic impacts from the coronavirus, and it may last a while longer. But the quantity of money that is being thrown at the market is going to continue to then create speculation as well. But it's probably going to be in other sectors. The potential here is that we're going to have a very hard 6 months in terms of defaults, and then things potentially start to pick up. One thing that is something we have to be particularly vigilant for are clear relative strength leaders. If we start to see that, well, what's likely in the wider market is that we get a rebound to unwind at least part of the oversold condition, and then we get some messing around. Either we're going to push on and extend the downtrend, or we're going to have a relatively prolonged period of ranging. There are going to be assets that do not pull back, or they put in much higher reaction lows. And those are likely to be the candidates to lead us up and out of this correction. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.